You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hello and welcome to the Game Theory Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Vecini. We're presented by The Athletic. Today on the show, our dearest friend, Matthew Penny, is back. And it's a mock draft podcast, folks. We are going to go 1 through 30 in the first round. Probably talk a little bit more about the top end than we will about the back end. Having said that, I feel like the top five or so is pretty set. And then the chaos happens after number six starts. So maybe we'll dive further into like the 6 to 10 range, Penny.
Yeah, we'll start with a sixth pick and go down from there. Yeah. And see where it leads us.
I think that's what the people want. They don't want to hear us go with whoever you're going to take at number one overall. So that's the move.
We get it. You guys like Cade Cunningham. Move on. We're trying.
How are things going on your end, Penny?
Things are awesome. I'm always excited to be a passenger on the NBA Draft Podcast Express, so I can't complain. I'm always honored to be invited back.
Yeah, it's I'm honored to have you. I would say there's more more honor going that way. So let's just jump in.
Let's do it.
Waste any time. We typically waste like 10 minutes before we start recording. Let's not do that today. Let's just go on ahead, dive in, and for what it's worth, the order, we're using teams this time. This is not just like us listing 30 prospects. So the order is going to be, let me make sure it lines up.
Oh, please get the right one.
Yeah. That seems like a good idea. Okay. It's going to be Houston, Detroit, Minnesota, Oklahoma City, Cleveland, Orlando, Toronto, Orlando, Sacramento, New Orleans is your top 10. Starting at 11, Indiana, Washington, San Antonio, Memphis, Charlotte, Boston, Golden State, Atlanta, Oklahoma City, Lakers. Then starting at 21, Knicks, Rockets, Knicks again, Rockets again, Denver, Brooklyn, Clippers, Philly, Phoenix, Utah. So, Penny, with the number one overall pick to the Houston Rockets, go on ahead.
That's me. Yeah, I'm honored to make the number one pick. No surprise, this is like the last five mock drafts we've done here. Going with Cade Cunningham, guard, Oklahoma State. Best available guy for me on the board, the highest level player. Will be playing alongside guys like John Wall, but can play with many different interchangeable parts fairly easily. That's the way his game is. He seamlessly fits with different guys. His game is going to go to new levels with spacing and shooters, especially in the corners on drives. And I just looked quick. Last season at Oklahoma State, there's only one player not named Cade Cunningham that shot over 33% from three. That was Isaac Likely. The Rockets currently have eight players above that mark. So even his facilitating numbers are going to go up despite having a great freshman year for the Cowboys. So I'm very happy with that pick for our franchise.
Yeah, I think that goes to show just the difference of skill level from the current NBA to the current like college game in some situations. Houston is by far the worst team in the NBA right now. Like, it's just not even close in many respects. And they still have drastically more offensive skill and spacing than what this Oklahoma State team had. And Cade is one of those guys that's going to fit kind of across the board. I do want to note that for Houston loses this pick if it doesn't fall in the top four. They currently have a 52% chance to keep their pick in the top four. I mean, it's hard to overemphasize how big of a disaster it would be for Houston to lose this pick.
Yeah, I don't think they'd be psyched if they fell outside the top four. This is literally winning the lottery by going first and a guy that can be a franchise changer. So to not get their hopes up too much, and we'll have our fingers crossed that they're not outside that top four or five and regretting all their past decisions.
Okay, so I have the fun thing where the draft starts. And by the way, this is what we would do. This is not us trying to predict shit. This is not us trying to, like, oh my God, what is Troy Weaver going to do here at number two? Getting inside the mind of Troy Weaver hasn't really worked for anyone so far, because it feels like he has a totally different way of going about evaluating prospects that in the past draft was very successful with Isaiah Stewart and Sadiq Bey. So I'm not taking shots here. I'm just saying he has a very unique process that he seems to go about undertaking. So at number two, with the Detroit Pistons, I am going to take Jalen Suggs. And the reason that I'm going to take Jalen Suggs is that I think his mix of, like, explosiveness, power, athleticism, and ability to play both on and off the ball kind of actually does fit pretty well with Killian Hayes in the backcourt. Additionally, I do have Jalen Suggs at number two on my board. I think that those two, assuming that Suggs' shooting is pretty real, which I think that for the most part he's going to be fine as a shooter. I think he's going to keep working and keep getting to that point. I think you add his ability to live in the paint coming out of ball screens, it's really going to help Detroit's offense just kind of break down defenders in a way that obviously they just don't really have anyone to do right now.
And you'll have the double playmaking ability with him and Killian Hayes, if you believe they can play alongside each other, which I do as well. And I like also the defensive presence he brings. And like you said, Troy Weaver has a unique style and has changed the culture in Detroit and continues to do so. Had a good draft with guys like you mentioned, Isaiah Stewart and Sadiq Bey. So a very good piece to build on what they already have there too.
Okay. Number three, you are up with the Minnesota Timberwolves, who, by the way, since I sent you the order, have fallen like all the way down to like six in this order because well, they keep winning games.
Yeah, it's usually in your nature to then like switch it on the fly and say, all right, Minnesota's going to be six. You're drafting Oklahoma City for three.
Nah.
Like, good. I haven't prepped this for hours, but yeah, hold on.
Nah, I'm not going to screw you like that. Let's go. Minnesota, number three.
So this is good for the Timberwolves. This necessarily wouldn't be my pick, but I would say for Minnesota, I think it could make the most sense. And I'm going to go with Evan Mobley, power forward center out of USC. If you believe in his versatility on both ends of the floor and by the shooting, that means to me he can play the four and can play with Karl Towns. You have Anthony Edwards, D'Angelo Russell, even Jaden McDaniels. I don't know what the injury deal is with Malik Beasley and what that looks like going forward. But like, he's a nice piece to complement what you already have there. And worst case here is this contingency plan. You have the best big and one of the best prospects in the draft. I think his shooting's going to get there. The defense will definitely help alongside Karl Anthony Towns. I think Minnesota would be pretty happy if somehow Mobley slides down to them there.
So we like sort of kind of broached this like quickly yesterday, and I texted you that I just still haven't wrapped my head around Minnesota potentially getting Evan Mobley and pairing him with Karl Towns. I'd go a different direction if I was them, but at the same token, like, I get it. Like, I think that Mobley is versatile and mobile enough to where it could work. I think it would work on offense reasonably well if Mobley can actually shoot it. I'm still just not there in terms of trying to navigate the way that would work. I think I would just like take a perimeter player and
yeah, hope that Karl Towns I wasn't 100% there either, but I'm guessing, not a spoiler here, who your next pick is going to be is a little bit too much of the Anthony Edwards kind of like archetype, and I'd want like a different look, albeit maybe in the front court. That was kind of my reasoning behind it.
Yeah, and honestly, I kind of get it. It becomes a complicated pick for Minnesota if that ends up being the case. So here we are. We're at number four with Oklahoma City, and I am going to take Jalen Green here. I think that Green's ability to just be explosive and be just a high level scorer would mesh really, really well with kind of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander's poise and creativity off the handle. Like, it's hard to imagine two different backcourt players who are like 20 point per game scorers. You know, like Jalen Green just lives in the paint because he's a straight line driver with an unreal first step and with incredible explosive leaping ability. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander like has to set you up with just an incredible handle, uses his patience, uses his poise, and then just uses those long limbs to extend and finish around the basket and to extend and kind of just cover ground quickly. So that would be a fascinating pairing. You'd obviously end up with, you know, Lou Dort kind of in the backcourt. They've been comfortable over the years kind of playing three guards in the backcourt in a way that works for me. I would hope that that would end the experiment that has been Poku at the three.
That's a lot of experiments, yeah.
did you see their starting lineup last night, by the way?
I did not.
It was incredible. It was Théo Maledon, Darius Bazley at the two.
Mm-hmm.
Poku at the three, Isaiah Roby at the four, and then Moses Brown at the five. They were basically playing the like three fours and a five starting lineup last night.
Yeah, I mean, just sit in a 2-3 zone and put your arms out and do the Syracuse thing and have the longest wingspan on the court. I mean, that works sometimes.
It was bizarre.
For Jalen Green, I do think that this feels like the right place, too, where he can play through his mistakes.
Yeah.
Has a younger head coach, great development system. And I become more of a Jalen Green fan and believer since the G League Ignite. When you gather feedback from people around that program, everything comes back that he wants to work, improve, yep. He wants constructive criticism. And Brian Shaw even said that he does have that it factor, that he wants to be the best player in the draft. So he has had that level of growth since declaring and doing that, as opposed to going to college for a year.
Yeah, and I want to mention with Jalen Green, too, like Jalen Green kind of sits comfortably at number four. It feels like every time we do something like this, like I think Jalen Green is firmly in the mix to go number two. Like, absolutely, unequivocally could go number two if the right person gets the number two overall pick.
Yeah, I co-sign that too. Right? And he does have as much upside as these other guys right in front of him too. And it is probably neck and neck for two through five. I don't want to say one is a definite, but it's probably close at this point.
Yeah, I would say there's a pretty clear like two through four group for me even at this point. And we're gonna go number five here, and you're gonna select who I believe you're going to select here for the Cleveland Cavaliers. So go ahead.
It is Jonathan Kuminga from the G League Ignite. Yeah. I thought you were going to do the move like, and he'll have for dinner the chicken Caesar salad. It's like, yes, I did want that. with Kuminga, you do have this two-way scorer defender, has to shore up some defensive principles, but he has that build frame to make it work, play next to Isaac Okoro, can create his own offense off of broken plays and secondary looks while you have guys like Colin Sexton and Darius Garland who can be ball dominant. Ironically, also one of my notes I put, he's probably in that second tier of elite prospects right now, with the separator being his jump shot. If his jump shot comes around, we could look back in a few years and say we should have believed in the development. But if not, it's a very safe pick for me at number five.
So I actually think that there is some more downside with Kuminga the more that I watched the Ignite tape. He doesn't quite have that first step that I quite thought he had. Like, he's not a wild athlete. He's a good athlete. He's like not like a, and he plays super hard all the time, but he's not like Jalen Brown out there. You know what I mean?
No. And that was like a tag he had gotten probably prior to playing a G League game, is that was the best NBA comp fit comparison.
Yeah. And he's not that athletically. Like, you even go back to the Cal tape where Cal's court was hilariously condensed and it was miserable to watch Jalen Brown play at Cal. Like, oh my God, that was one of the worst experiences I feel like a prospect could have possibly had from an on-court perspective. Like, you go back and you look at who Jalen Brown played with. It was Ty Wallace, who was like a sub 30% shooter. It was Ivan Rabb, who didn't shoot.
Big time recruit, though. Right? Yeah.
They started Kingsley Okoro at center. He was like a 7'1" kid. And then they played Jordan Matthews as like their, you know, floor spacer that they occasionally use to shoot threes. And then they had Jabari Bird on that roster as well. And it was just a mess. Like, the offense was all over the place. And he never had a single driving lane. Like, never. His handle wasn't as good as it is now. So, like, he didn't really know how to navigate those tight spaces. But holy shit, like, he never had a driving lane, but you could still see the crazy explosiveness and pop and everything in his game, that it was there, it just didn't translate to the tape. Like, I still had Jaylen Brown at number 5, I think, if I remember correctly, on my board, because, like, the numbers weren't there to do that, but the tape was fine. Like, he had a 52 true shooting percentage, he had a 29 three-point percentage, 65 from the line, 15 assist rate versus 21 turnover rate. Like, wasn't overly blocks and steals heavy. Like, wasn't even in the top 500 nationally in either of those numbers. But you just kind of looked at the tape and you were like, okay, I can see how this works with NBA spacing. With Kuminga, like, Kuminga already has the NBA spacing with the G League Ignite, at least, like, on some level. And it, like, the pop just wasn't there athletically in the same way it was with Jaylen Brown.
No, and Kuminga did have 15 games, so I don't have the Jaylen Brown rookie numbers in front of me, but I'm guessing it took him a little bit longer than that to get going when he first got to Boston, and obviously he's adjusted and really transformed his game. And you could say he has, like, a little bit less pop, but his shot from three is significantly better. I'm not writing off Kuminga yet, but I agree. There are some, I don't want to say red flags, but a little bit of warning signs that you have to dig through and make sure you're okay with the shortcomings, but knowing that he's going to be able to give you other stuff and finish on the glass and have second play opportunities and defend a little bit, take some charges, block shots from, I'd say, even at the small ball five a little bit if you need to.
And he plays super hard. Like, you're never going to have to worry about him, like, not playing hard. You are going to have to worry about him making, like, the right decisions defensively and, like, making the right rotations, but we'll see how it goes. By the way, I'm pretty sure I just jinxed Jaylen Brown, like, in the middle of talking, like, going on a side tangent about Jaylen.
Why? Are they on, like, right now to just airball the three or something?
No. The Celtics say all-star Jaylen Brown has been diagnosed with a torn ligament in his left wrist and is out for the remainder of the season.
Sam, this is what we do, right? Like, it was written. Like, this was, we jinx everybody. So it's good. He just went on this glowing review and then, you know, here comes the anvil. Well, actually, he's out for the year. So yeah, Kuminga, great. Love him at 5.
Yeah. As a Celtics fan, Penny, do you want to have some sadness about the Celtics? Because that basically does end the season for the Celtics, I feel like. I mean,
it was sadness, but now this is like, I don't know, melancholy and the infinite sadness. We're going Smashing Pumpkins here. I don't know how much deeper you can really get. We're down there right now.
Yeah, they're a mess. They're an absolute mess. A
lot of Aaron Naismith minutes, I guess. He's been playing better. Let's take some positives out of it.
Okay,
more Taco doing Euro steps. Yeah. Okay. Orlando, we're back. 6.
How about that possession where Taco, like, blocked 6 shots in a row? That was fun. Okay. Number 6, the Orlando Magic. This was by far the hardest thing that I still don't really know that I've gotten this pick right. If they really need to end up, like, with a top 4 pick and get one of these perimeter players.
Yes, they do. Yeah.
Because there's no way they can draft Scottie Barnes. Like, just no. Please, for the love of God, don't draft Scottie Barnes. You already have Jonathan Isaac. You already have Chuma Okeke. Like, you already have Mo Bamba on the roster. You already have Wendell Carter. Like, you have all of these, like, 3-4 hybrids. Like, please, in these 5s, like, please don't draft Scottie Barnes. Davion Mitchell, I'm a bit hesitant on because they just drafted Cole Anthony. Now, I think that Mitchell and Cole Anthony actually be, like, a pretty interesting combination, but they also have Markel Fultz there. So, like, I think that they really like Markel and want to see what he looks like coming back. And Markel had, like, kind of established himself as, you know, a bottom, you know, bottom 10% starting point guard in the NBA, but still a starting point guard in the NBA. I'm gonna go.
I love the pause because I also have my list of guys here, and I'm, like, feverishly preparing for the next pick, and I'm, like, about to cross them off my Sharpie, and then you circle back to another hesitation. So I'm at the edge of my seat here.
So I did the draft guide for James Booknight yesterday, and I came away more impressed with his tape than I thought I would. He actually is just, like, an unbelievable ISO creator. I actually think he's just going to create his own shot, just straight up the NBA level. Absorbs and finishes through contact as a driver. I think at some point he's going to shoot it. He doesn't shoot it really all that well right now, but do you know how many unguarded shots off the catch James Bouknight took last year?
Close to single digit. Everything was
contested. Oh, no, it was single digits. It was 9.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Like,
I was making a bad joke, but yeah. So no, he's the pick. So 6, you're going Bouknight. So I got to get my Sharpie fired up,
yeah,
and prepping for my, okay.
I don't feel, I would say that this is the range where we start to get into a circumstance where James Bouknight could realistically go anywhere from like 6 to 15 on draft night. And this might look really fucking dumb in a month where, like,
yeah, he goes 21st. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just like, what are we doing here? But his game, I think, offensively is tailor-made to translating to getting his own shot at the NBA level. The problem is that, like, he's not Anthony Edwards athletically. Like, he has aspects of, like, Zach LaVine in that he has that, like, hang-time floating ability, but he's not LaVine explosive. You know what I mean? Like, that, to me, LaVine's the closest thing, but he's just not that level of athlete.
No, and we've said LaVine is probably closer to a guy like Jalen Green, and Booker also doesn't have the size and power of Anthony Edwards that can bail him out at times where he has to hit a bump, embrace it, finish through contact. Bouknight, still part of his problem was falling over and getting hit with a forearm or go around screens, and he'll fight it defensively. He'll try to get around and recover, and offensively he's still going to attack. It's just, is he able to open up the game even more for himself with an improved three-point shot and taking better quality shots too, like you said, and taking more than 9 that are open, and the openness of the NBA game and court and spacing, he's going to be able to do that just naturally too.
Yeah, so I'm going to make what might be a bad pick with James Bouknight, but I'm going to happily take him because of the offensive ability. And by the way, Orlando just continues to need, like, offense in a very real way. So that's where I'm prioritizing things. Okay. Toronto at 7. You go.
Yeah, we're moving on. This could have been in your last mock draft too. And Toronto with Lowry probably heading out of town. You need a backcourt mate to Fred VanVleet and probably Gary Trent Jr. You made a good point in your guide about the Raptors having a liking for older players, Pascal Siakam, Malachi Flynn. So I'm going to go with one of the biggest stock boosters in the tournament. I know it's early, but I think he fits in Davion Mitchell from Baylor. Hard nose, bulldog of a guard. He shot 44% from 3, which seems like scouts and people are poking holes in a little bit because it was for one season. And the previous years, the sample, he didn't shoot as well as he had in the past. That being said, I do love my pick and roll. He has that extra gear when changing speeds. I want him on the floor to end the game, and he can make momentum shifting plays defensively. So despite his age, I feel like it's a pretty safe pick for Toronto at 7 and what they already have around him too.
So yeah, this was my pick in the mock. There is a fit here that I love for Toronto that I just want to point out. I don't know if they would go down this road, but if I was Toronto, I think I would take Scottie Barnes, because think about the way that front court would work. You could roll out like an awesome, super athletic, switchable front court of Pascal Siakam, Scottie Barnes, OG Anunoby, and then you could have Fred VanVleet, who like fights his ass off and everything defensively. I really like the idea of just like leaning into just being this crazy defensive team because you have all of the pieces there. And Davion does that too. But I for some reason, like, I feel like Toronto is like a perfect landing spot for Scottie Barnes, because the other part of it is like offensively, the way that you have to unlock Scottie is you need to have a guy who can be like a pull-up shooter, like Fred can be, who can drag defenders toward him and then create that like open short roll area for Scottie. And then Scottie can hit like OG Anunoby in the corner, or you can hit like Pascal Siakam like cutting from the other corner into like dunker spot. Like, there's just a, that's one of my favorite fits that I've been conceptualizing in my brain over the course of the last little while. But I like Davion there too, because I think that he's super tough. He's physical. Like, he would fit a lot of what they look for in terms of just players there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. Totally. He was one of my 3 or 4 names I had, but I just, with free agency, it's easier to load up and know you're getting somebody there rather than chasing a vet and hoping that they'll take the money despite offering more than they're probably worth too.
Yeah. Okay. we are up at number eight. Number eight for me is Orlando again. I got both of the Orlando
we're
picks.
Back. Yeah.
This one I'm going to go Moses Moody.
Ooh, okay.
And the reason I'm going to go Moody here is because I think that they could use like a 3-and-D wing. They have Chuma Okeke, but I see Okeke as more of like a 3-4 hybrid as opposed to just like a true wing. I think they could use like a true shot making wing who can defend multiple spots. And that's what Moody is. Like Moody is going to make tough shots. He's not the most like crazy athletic dude in the world, but I do think he's going to come out here. He's going to knock down shots at a reasonable clip. And if not like a high level clip by the time he's 22, right? Like I think that he has every potential to be a 40% 3-point shooter by the time he's 23, 22. And then he's switchable defensively, has a 7-foot-1 wingspan, a 6-foot-6. Can handle the ball with a little bit more tightness than what I think he gets credit for. Like, can create his own shot a little bit better. So I'm going Moody at eight. So that would be Orlando coming away with Booknight and Moody, which kind of revamps their overall position in terms of the guard spot and the wing spot.
And have RJ Hampton, too. So you're yeah, kind totally. Of loading up with all these younger 19-ish-year-old guys, 19, 20 years old that
yeah, you can play and fast. Yeah, and Cole Anthony as well. Yep, and yeah, Markelle yeah. Fultz. And like it.
Those guys, it, yeah. Yeah. Being lead guards, yeah.
But like I feel like with Cole and with Markelle and with RJ, it really helps to kind of load up on shooting. Again, like I kind of buy Booknight shooting. I think that his percentages are more a result of he took just like miserably difficult shots as opposed to him just flat out not being able to shoot at all. Like you look at the free throw percentages, it's like 82, 78, both of those 2 years. He has real touch. Like he has the floater game. He has the touch around the basket. Part of this for Orlando is me buying the translation of Booknight's shot. And then obviously buying the translation of Moody's shot. I think that that's what they need as much as anything. So, I'm kind of revamping the wing in Orlando is my goal.
All right. Good step there. Good step with two guys. I'm nine. The Sacramento Kings. I had James Booknight here, who you've stolen from me, which is fine. So I'm going to take another shooting guard here. If he slips, I think they'd be pretty pleased. I'm going to go with Keon Johnson from Tennessee.
Yeah.
They hit a home run last draft, I would say, with Tyrese Halliburton. You have both him and De'Aaron Fox that could use probably a bigger swing man. Keon has a lot of still untapped, unlocked stuff. The athleticism is there. The pop is there. When he was kind of allowed to run free more in Tennessee's offense, he was able to create a little bit, play some off the ball and away and cutting back door and elevating in the lane. So I'm intrigued by him because he was a late blooming kid in high school, hasn't really had the highest level of stuff leading up to being Tennessee. So I'd also argue that the spotlight and the highest level of basketball was still semi-new despite him playing USA basketball. So I'm also just a believer that he's going to find a way to figure it out at the very least with the athletic gifts and tools that he has. And if the jumper comes, then it's maybe it's a home run again, part two from last year's draft.
Yeah, if the jumper comes for Keon, I mean, just an unreal player, I think. But I'm not. I think the jumper is going to take a lot of work. I don't want to like just flat out like throw it away because I think that he'll work at it. And like everything I've been told is just like elite level character kid, like going to have no problems wanting to get in the gym and keep improving something. But to me, like that jumper is almost like you have to rewrite it from the ground up. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and we can start over. And not that you had to completely rework Halliburton's, but you could argue, too, that he had, I know, albeit he shot a much higher percentage, but people were knocking, is he going to be able to shoot it with, like, that little hitch and set shot? And he has. He's been really good. So maybe it's a few tweaks and some confidence stuff, and that'll be enough of a fix to keep it. Defense is honest where they have to cover him and not give him plenty of space and dare him to shoot.
Okay, so at number 10, I'm going to go with one just out of the mock. I'm going to go Josh Giddey here at number 10 to the New Orleans Pelicans. I think they could use another wing who is unselfish, who I think at some point will shoot, and who I think can be like a secondary ball handler for them. They took Kyra last year. He looks like their point guard of the future. They have another guy in Nikhil Alexander Walker, who I think is going to be a starter in the NBA still. Everything we've seen from him this year, especially prior to his injury that made him miss a month, kind of made me think that he's going to be just fine long term, and he's going to be a really high level fit with the Zion Williamson, Brandon Ingram core. And then look, like, I could take someone like Kai Jones here, who has potential to be a floor spacing big, which is exactly what they need, but like, I don't really want to use another roster spot on the big position when they just took Jackson Hayes a year and a half ago, and then they also gave Steven Adams a couple years of an extension. So I am going to go with Josh Giddey here, because I think that his ball movement, his versatility, his potential to shoot it, his unselfishness, his willingness to get up and play in transition too, I think that it just kind of fits with what this roster kind of looks like. Now, you know, Josh is not a great defender right now, and I think they're going to need to continue to focus on that end of the court. I know that Pelicans fans have been like, look, they've been a much better defense over the course of the last month. And kind of, I think that's a little bit of fool's gold personally, because they've played a terrible schedule, but we'll see. I'm willing to at least like acknowledge that they've been better. But yeah, I'm going to go with Josh, and hope that the idea of Josh being an 18-year-old incredibly effective player in the NBL right now is going to translate to him being really good by the time he's 21 in the NBA.
So I don't want to say writing him off, but then how does Lonzo Ball kind of fit in that equation?
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, I think that they could probably play together. Like, I would be fascinated to see a lineup at long-term of Kyra Lewis, Lonzo Ball, Josh Giddey, Brandon Ingram, Zion Williamson. Like, I think that
a lot of fast break weapons. Be a lot of highlights, I think.
And a lot of ball movement. Like, you could throw Nikhil Alexander Walker in for Lonzo. You could throw Nikhil in for Kyra Lewis, and you'd probably still have enough ball movement and shooting and versatility if Giddey's shot translates. I think that that's the big thing with Josh. Like, you have to hope that the shot translates. I also, like, considered a couple of the older floor spacers here, just in general. Like, just take a Corey Kispert, take a Chris Duarte, right? But
yeah,
I don't know. Like, it feels like someone younger kind of matches up with their age timeline a little bit more to me than taking like one of these older guys that I think could contribute quicker to things.
Yeah, I get that. I'm there with you.
Okay, before we get to number 11, let's take a quick commercial break. Okay, and we're back. Penny, you are up at number 11 with the Indiana Pacers, who did you by chance get to see the Goga Bitadze Greg Foster moment?
I did. Yeah. It was replayed many times on the interwebs. I did see it.
Everything about that was so enjoyable to me. Like,
not as enjoyable as the Rangers hockey fight where they drop the puck and like then they drop the gloves. That was the next step.
Yeah, look, I'm out on the Tom Wilson experience. I've been a Penguins fan my entire life. I don't need Tom Wilson in my life. But the Bitadze Foster thing is hilarious because Bitadze chooses to make a business decision to not go up and try and contest a dunk. And then he comes down, makes a three, tells Greg Foster to sit the fuck down. And then Greg Foster, like, just starts screaming at him. I mean, what are we doing here? Like, is it just like the pressure, do we think, of the Indiana situation being a total mess? Like, how do you even react to that, I feel like?
There's a few NBA situations I would say are similar. It's just, it's boiling over. It's bubbling over at this point of the year.
Oh, I'm sure that there are, but like none of them are boiling over and bubbling over
in a public
timeout situation.
Yeah. Right. where you're breaking up a match and it turns into who you think would have won the fight if it happened.
By the way, there's
guys who are pro wrestlers from that country. Like it would be a battle. I don't think it would be a one-sided thing. I think it would be a real battle between the two. Yeah.
Like, this is... Like, Greg Foster is a scary man who I would want absolutely nothing to do with.
If listening, we are scared of you. Do not... Yeah, don't follow up.
That dude does not back down from anyone. Like, there are clips out there of, like, him, like, not backing down from Shaquille O'Neal. So, look, I'm willing to totally say that Greg Foster absolutely can win that fight. But I'm just saying that I think that people were underestimating the Eastern Bloc a little bit in terms of these dudes who come over from there. I would not rule out Goga winning that for sure. I would say let's go to the Indiana Pacers draft pick though. Who would you
Cooler heads prevailed, and they will here with the 11th pick. We're gonna go with Franz Wagner from Michigan. They could use, I'd argue, a more defensive-minded guy. We have T.J. Warren and Caris LeVert as these wing score creators. To me, Wagner is one of the highest floor players in the draft, and I'm going to block out that final game in the NCAA tournament. He more than held his own versus Scotty Barnes, and that was kind of a question, like, athletically, would he be able to cover a bigger guy with an NBA-type frame and wingspan? And he did. He can score on his own. He's great making plays out of pick and roll. He's a pretty fluid defender. I don't think he's going to make a ton of mistakes out there. He's not going to hurt you. In worst case, I do see him as a good rotational piece where he fits in with other guys who are scorers, and he doesn't have to have the ball every play.
Yeah, I dig that. I actually like that one quite a bit. Number 12 is the Washington Wizards. And this one was one I didn't really know what to do with, because Daniel Gafford looks very useful for them right now as a potential long-term option at center. I've been kind of assuming that they would fill that need at some point, but they've gotten, they're like the poster child for, you can find bigs randomly on the market. Robin Lopez and Daniel Gafford have provided more than adequate production at the center position for the Washington Wizards this year. So with the Wizards, I am deciding to go with, this is a tough one. I'm going to go with, I don't like this. This is where the draft gets tough, because I was kind of hoping that Franz would be there, because I know that Tommy Shepard loves the European Wagner's scouting system,
yeah.
And obviously loves the Wagner's too.
Yeah,
man, you kind of stole my thunder here, Penny. This is why teams get 5 minutes on draft night. Man,
TikTok.
This is great.
The good thing is you have the thing where it'll shrink the space, so it's going to seem like you're thinking very long, but it won't come off that long.
Yeah, but I've spent the whole time talking, so I don't know that I can't truncate silence here. Okay, I am going to go. I'm going to go Jaden Springer here.
Ooh, big jump. Okay.
And I don't know that I love it, but part of this is me assuming that at some point the Bradley Beal thing is going to get worked out. And you just kind of look at this roster right now. They don't really have a crazy amount of high upside, long-term perimeter players, in large part because they have guys like Russell Westbrook and Bradley Beal. My question is, what happens if Bradley Beal finally goes to them this summer and is like, look, we finished 9th or 10th in the Eastern Conference. I think I'm ready for a change. Let's look into a deal. I think that they would probably acquiesce there because he only has one guaranteed year left, I think, after this one. Might have two. I can't remember off the top of my head. Even so, moving Bradley Beal now is the right time to move Bradley Beal, not later. And if you look behind Bradley Beal and Russell Westbrook, they just don't have much in the terms of young perimeter creators. Garrison Matthews is 24, and I don't think anyone thinks he's the long-term answer. Chandler Hutchison has, by the way, kind of shown some interesting signs, maybe is the way to put it, since being acquired from the Bulls, which is good. And then Cassius Winston, is 22 years old and maybe can figure some things out. But again, I think Cassius profiles best as a high level backup guard. Getting someone who's a higher upside player there, younger, they can develop him in Jaden Springer. I mean, look, I don't love the pick, but it's one that makes sense. This would be tailor made for a trade down for me. But yeah, Jaden Springer works.
This is a pick. You said it for your last three. It shows our excitement for after five. But we learned last year, there's always going to be somebody. There's going to be somebody there. We're going to find them.
I actually liked last year's depth. This year, I'm less excited about the depth. Last year, I was sorting between 10 different options. And I will say, I think now we're past the point where I'm uncomfortable with who I have to take. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, you're up at number 13 with the Spurs.
I'm 13. San Antonio Spurs might be a little bit of a reach here, but he fits what they want to do offensively. I'm going to go with Corey Kispert from Gonzaga.
Okay, give me a pitch here.
Okay. They could use a floor spacer, I would argue, next to their younger guys like Keldon Johnson and Lonnie Walker. He did take his lumps defensively in the NCAA tournament, but I'm a believer that his strengths can be maximized in the NBA as a movement shooter that when the ball is swung to him, finds him in transition, he's going to create chances to score. Despite the numbers taking also a little dip toward the end of the year, still shot 53% from the field, 44% from three, and 88% from the free throw line. He can come in, and shooting is just such a skill that is sought out. And I saw a report today that somebody sent me that Duncan Robinson could get upwards of $20 million in offers for the next deal. So if I can get him locked in, a movement type shooter at 13, I'd be pretty satisfied.
Yeah, I dig that one. That one's really good. Okay, I'm up at 14 with the Memphis Grizzlies. This is another like weird spot, I think. They tend to take guys with high upside or guys that they think will just be able to play immediately. Like, they're very comfortable taking guys like Desmond Bane, Xavier Tillman, like super smart, high IQ players, or guys that just have like ridiculous high level upside. I'm going to go with the former here. I am going to take... Yeah, I'm just going to do this. I'm going to take Chris Duarte here.
Breaking my heart. Yeah, I had him about 19 or so, but I'm not totally shocked.
Yeah, I think Chris Duarte is a stud. He fits everything that this team looks for. And this team has been like sneaky kind of weird in terms of its backcourt rotations for the last little while. And like, you can look at it as they're dealing with some injuries here and there, like Grayson Allen's been out, but you know, they have Dylan Brooks, they have Desmond Bane, and then behind them, you know, you obviously have D'Anthony Melton, who's been terrific, but like John Concher is getting like pretty real minutes, and I know that there is a real John Concher hive out there, but I feel like if you could upgrade on Concher, like that's a real win for you as a team, and maybe someone would look at Chris Duarte as being just like another version of Grayson Allen. But yeah, I think Duarte is a super high level team defender, and those are things that the Memphis Grizzlies really look for. He is obviously just a ridiculous shooter. I think if you pair Ja Morant and Jaren Jackson with guys like Desmond Bane and Chris Duarte, who are both just going to be 40% three-point shooters for the next 5 years of their lives, for sure, plus probably beyond 5 years, like that's gonna be a really good fit. And then on top of it, Duarte has the ability, I think, to stay in front of ones in a way that Bane doesn't necessarily always have, defensively, I mean, which would allow you even more positional flexibility and versatility in the way that you defend with Ja Morant. Like, you might be able to slide him off the ball a little bit more regularly and kind of allow him to take some offensive breaks, you know what I mean? Or defensive breaks for offense.
And the age isn't as big as an issue. I forget what team you were mentioning earlier, where you don't really have to worry about him kind of being the elder statesman with a bunch of younger guys. While they do have a younger group, he can kind of slide in. You're not worried necessarily about how long his development is going to take or when he's going to reach his ceiling, because he can slide in, like you said, even defend, hit some open jumpers, and we've harped on here forever. At worst, he's a third guard and a rotational guy, and I like the pieces around him where he won't necessarily have to do everything on his own either.
Yeah, totally. Okay. Let's go number 15. Now that we're out of the lottery, we might go a little bit faster here. Let's go Charlotte, number 15.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised by this slide, because I had a different guy slotted here. But the question for me a little bit is who can run with LaMelo Ball. And I'm going to go with Scottie Barnes.
Oh, God, I forgot Scottie Barnes was there.
Well, we are happy to have him in Charlotte. I know that he's going to be able to create in the half court, but at the same time, he can run the wing a little bit with LaMelo. His offense wasn't always the best when he tried to be a point guard, but I like him running little sets out of the mid post. He's versatile enough defensively. He can switch. He can take the ball off the rim, advance it to LaMelo. He can throw an underhand full court alley-oop pass that shouldn't happen. I think his intensity and the way he kind of prepares for games and opponents could really mesh well with what they're trying to accomplish there.
Yeah, and you know, I mentioned, like, I forgot Scotty Barnes was there. And the reason that, like, I'm surprised he's there was, and I think that this shows how tough it is to find his floor as a draft prospect. I'd be surprised if he went this low. In fact, I don't really think he will. But, for instance, like, I really like Scotty Barnes. I have him as my number six player. And that's, like, in a vacuum. But then you look at just the teams that are selecting, right? At number six, I had Orlando. Number eight, I had Orlando. He, like, they can't draft him, like I mentioned earlier. Number 10, I have New Orleans. Like, he can't play with Brandon Ingram and Zion Williamson, I don't think. Like, you don't want that. Washington has just drafted Denny Avdia and Rui Hachimura in back-to-back drafts, so he doesn't fit there. And then Memphis, like, yeah, you can make a somewhat reasonable case, but, like, I mean, they already have a pretty loaded, like, front court in a lot of ways. And, like, they have Jonas Valanciunas for another year. They have, you know, Jaren Jackson. They have Xavier Tillman. Like, they're pretty set. Like, maybe they could take another one of those, like, high-level, high-IQ young players. And honestly, like, maybe I should have just taken Scotty at 14. But I don't know. Like, this Memphis team feels like it's ready to play now. So it's interesting. Scotty's in a weird spot. I think that me having the picks that I have, like, I would have loved to have taken Scotty, but it shows just how difficult it can be to fit someone like Scotty into a specific scheme given his weaknesses of his game, which I'm sure that you're going to talk about now.
I'm not. I was going my point was going to be that they needed, Charlotte probably needs a front court free agent just because of the Cody Zeller thing. So I kind of had Usman Garuba, I had Kai Jones. For Scotty to slide to this spot, it's even a talent upgrade over those guys. So I think they'd be thrilled. I don't think he's going to slide on this, but my greater point is that this really shows you the difference between big boards and mock drafts, because you might personally have him six, but like you outlined, just if it doesn't fit, he might end up at 15. That just might be the way that things slide on draft night.
So, okay, we're up with the Boston Celtics at 16. This is definitely going to be a big man. I'm going to go with Alperen Sengun.
Ooh.
And that's a bit of a, like, maybe, I don't even know that it's a reach or a surprise or anything, but it's a different pick, I feel like, than what, like, I would decide between Kai Jones, Usman Garuba, and Alperen Sengun. The reason that I like Sengun is that his hands, his dexterity and ball screens, I've talked to people who think he's really going to shoot it at a high level at some point. I think all of that stuff really meshes with what Boston's looking for. And I think it particularly meshes with Robert Williams as, like, kind of a combination big inside. Like, they desperately need more depth in their front court. The Tristan Thompson signing just straight up did not work. Obviously, they've moved Daniel Tice to Chicago in a deal that, like, frankly, didn't really help them all that much. Like, they really needed Tice at this point, with Robert Williams kind of being in and out of the lineup here and there. And frankly, like, I just don't know how much we can trust Robert Williams to stay healthy at this point. And we're firmly in the middle of the Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown contention window. If you're the Boston Celtics, like, they're young, they're still under 25, but they're going to have to make a decision on free agency before they're going to hit their, like, late 20s. So the Celtics need to prove that they can contend now. And I think that Sengun, just given his overall offensive skill, like, his upside as a offensive creator, I think, is just real. You know, Usman Garuba is absolutely a real option here. Kai Jones, I think, is more of a project. I would prefer him to land in something in more of a space that would, you know, work for him as a project. But yeah, I'm going Sengun at 16.
Yeah, my notes were, could use everything, you know, aside from wings. And it was just like you throwing darts at me with every, like, Tice is gone, this guy's okay. I like the fit because it's a little bit of a different look than what they have with Robert Williams. I think Usman Garuba could be one of those kind of, like, energy guys, defensive guys that Danny Ainge has covered in the past too, or a big guard. But Giddey went early and Cade Cunningham went first. So if this is where we're at right now, I get the pick there.
Okay, so number 17 is going to be the Golden State Warriors.
Oof. All right, Golden State Warriors. I have, like, two here. I'm going to go with, I do believe they need another offensive creator. I mean, despite the the year that, that Steph Curry has had, which is incredible. I do think that this is a crazy thing to say. Like, he needs more help kind of like pulling guys away from him. If we're getting an off-the-bench scorer that can fill it up, this might be a little bit high, but I'm going to go with Cam Thomas here.
Okay. I mean, I think that's like a fine pick, yeah.
It's I don't want to do the hedge of this is like the mock draft versus the big board, because I think I'm a little bit lower than most.
Yeah, it fills a need for them like pretty desperately. Like, they need someone who can get offense off the bench.
And that's what he can. He averaged 23 points per game at LSU, had a great offensive season. There were some efficiency issues down the stretch, but you get into a veteran locker room and you can learn the tricks of the trade from guys like Steph Curry. Hopefully that can kind of shape his game a little bit more than the freewheeling style he had with a lot of room to make mistakes because they needed him to score at LSU so bad. So with him there, it's kind of a best available scoring-ish guy that could plug and play some.
Okay, number 18. This is actually a really tough one, too, because Atlanta, obviously pretty good at the big position, given that they have John Collins and Clint Capella. I frankly think like they could maybe even take another one. Have a ton of wings just with what they've done in the draft over the last few years, and then you know, have Trae Young on the roster. So I really had Cam Thomas like kind of slotted there. I didn't think there was any way you were going to take Cam Thomas. Like, straight up.
This is what happens. This is what like I was saying before. I was trying to anticipate who you would take too, so my board wasn't messed up.
Yeah, that's gross. That's real gross. Thanks, man. I'm just going to take the best player, the highest upside player that I have available here. That's going to be the highest upside non-big, I should say. And that could change. Like, if they decide to make a decision and not retain John Collins for a reason that wouldn't be great to me, like, I would keep John Collins, personally. If they decide not to retain John Collins, they could actually look for another big. But given that he's currently on the roster and given the fact they have restricted free agency rights to him in the offseason, I am going to go with Zaire Williams because they've had some actual success developing these young guys now to where I think that because their roster is as loaded as it is, they can afford to take someone who's like more of a deeper bench project, stick them in College Park with the G League, let them develop. I also think this pick is like tailor-made for a potential move because they really might see themselves as being contenders now. They have enough young guys. They might want an older guy around that could help them like continue to win now.
But that's why the upside play works, whether it's Zaire, whether it's Jalen Johnson, somebody like that where you can invest a little bit at 18, you know, drafting him at 8. If it pans out, you look great. And if it doesn't, you still have a really good core with guys like DeAndre Hunter and Cam Reddish. So it's not really a miss if this is like a sort of swing for the fences, because Zaire was really good to start the year, then battled injuries and came back and didn't totally look like himself. So if he can piece back to that player from the preseason tournaments, then that would be a great pick at 18.
Okay, number 19, you are up with the Oklahoma City Thunder.
So Oklahoma City Thunder, earlier in the draft night, they took Jalen Green at 4. I am going to go with kind of best available on the board here, and I'm going to go with Kai Jones.
Yeah, that's a good one.
So Kai, I'm a little surprised. I had him 11 on my own kind of personal big board here. He can fit well and next to that enormous lineup of 6'9 plus guys. Can play him next to Poku if Poku's a 3-4, whatever, with Dort. Block shots, gets up and down, can shoot it a little bit. Still wild on some of the defensive rotations, but does recover. As he puts on a little bit more size, too, I think he'll protect the rim better. His block numbers weren't great. Was a fantastic flashes player at Texas. There was always these 2 to 3 minute stretch where he looked unbelievable. If they find a way to bottle all that up with the core of guys that they have, and if you get Jalen Green early in the draft, that's a great 1-2 combo on draft night.
Yeah, I think that's the absolute pick here. This is a team that can afford to take its time with, you know, big guys and can afford to give Kai Jones some real room to grow and develop. Like, this is actually where I hope he ends up on draft night, like ends up in Oklahoma City in some regard.
Yeah, it's a good fit. And we're rolling now. You are 20 with the LA Lakers.
Okay, the LA Lakers at 20, very interesting one. They have a lot of these bigger guys that they like to have around. They like to have guys that can take the burden off of Anthony Davis as to not have to play center. So I'm going to go with Usman Garuba here because I think he's someone that could like just straight up help them now. Like, I think that if you put him like in the playoffs, he could probably steal 15 minutes a night defensively playing next to Anthony Davis. His switchability would be very real for them. He's kind of the perfect guy where if you're crafting like a, even though he's smaller because Anthony Davis is so good as a weak side rim protector, I kind of think that Garuba could just deal with like, you know, playing center and making the right rotations and then being super switchable on the perimeter. I would go with Garuba here at number 20. And honestly, I think he's going to go higher than this on draft night too. So, this
I like,
ended up,
I like that
strong.
Fit too, though. Yeah. Cause he's younger. He can be that kind of baseball middle reliever innings minutes eater right now because it's a long season and Anthony Davis and LeBron have battled injuries and rest, and he can come in and play and defend, and the offense is getting better and he's played well the last couple weeks in EuroLeague.
Yep.
So I can see that one.
Okay, give me the Knicks. Give me some hot Knicks.
I got double Knicks. So we got double Knicks, double Houston. With 21st pick, the Knicks, you can take some risks here. They went against the grain with Emmanuel quickly and it really paid off. So I'm gonna go, I'd say a little unconventional. I'm gonna go with Ayo Dosunmu.
Okay, give me the take. Give me why you went on.
Here's my Johnny hot take. So 20 points, 6 rebounds, 5 assists, shot 49% from the field this past season. He's a tough guard, and I also feel like he can take Tibbs' tough coaching, while he can also squeeze the most out of his energy ability for what he is. He's kind of in a cluster of 3 or 4 guys, depending on who you take next. But I felt that he could be kind of like the hard-nosed defender, reel back in some of the wild stuff he can do offensively, and then maximize his strengths.
Yeah, I get that. I think that he's a really good fit with Tom Thibodeau. I don't know that he's a great fit with the roster necessarily. I think that RJ Barrett would have to be like a legit 40% on high volume shooter, not like a 40% on like 3.5 attempts a game, like 3-point shooter. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah. This is my first, like, I don't love it pick here, but I just kind of tried to connect the pieces and dots. And I don't, in a good sense, I think the Knicks have just kind of like not paid attention to all the noise and just tried to draft the guys that they felt were best on their own personal stuff and not going who's really in like the 20 range. They just stick to their guns and their plan.
Okay, number 20. What are we up to? 22, I believe.
22
Houston, Houston, yeah. Rockets. I'm going to go Isaiah Jackson as a big defensive shot blocking big man. They don't really have that right now because like Christian Wood is good. Christian Wood is not a great defensive big man. Isaiah Jackson is a ridiculous weak side shot blocker, crazy athlete, super athletic, is a rim runner, great in transition. Plays super hard, switchable defensively, just kind of ticks a lot of boxes for me if I am the Houston Rockets.
Yeah, I like that. I'm not mad at Houston for if he slides that far. I mean, there's been places that project him as high as like 10. So if you can get 22, and a lot of these guys, to me anyway, this is best available range wherever you can kind of maximize who the highest level prospect on the board. And we've talked about him. He just didn't shoot at all. He didn't shoot any threes. If he's able to figure that part of it out, he could be a guy you're talking about in the top 15.
Yep. Okay. Give me 23 with the New York Knicks again.
Oh, all right. So I'm 23 with the Knicks. All right. This is also kind of an unconventional, but a free pick here as another one of my dice rolls. I'm going to go with Jalen Johnson from Duke.
I was hoping you'd go with him because he's got a shot to go somewhere like,
yeah,
it's going to be wide with him. It's going to be 8-30, to be honest, with Jalen Johnson.
And if you have your pick at 21, whether it's Ayo or not, this is kind of like your even. If you hit one or two of these and they end up in the rotation, it should be considered a win. Didn't have the best year at Duke, really only put together 3 strongish games, I'd say. Had some off the court stuff. He left mid-year. If you study the film from high school and believe in his offensive versatility, his playmaking ability, how he can rip rebounds off the rim and run and create full court, and the jumper needs a few tweaks. It's not completely broken. The numbers are actually better than the shot looks, if that makes sense. To get a top five high school prospect who just didn't really have like the best total package of a season here, you should be applauded, I guess you could say. And this is also a wide range. Like he could go a lot higher. Like Isaiah Jackson, there's been places that say he could go in the top 10. That's high for me at 23. It's another win though.
Yeah, I'm not a big Jalen Johnson guy, but I never have been. I had him at like 18 or 19 preseason. So, you know, maybe he does end up going number 7 or 9 or something like that. But yeah, I don't know that the tape kind of says that that's real, and I don't think like his athleticism says that that's a thing that should happen. I'm going to go 24 with the Houston Rockets. I am going to take one that's just directly out of the mock draft. I'm going to take Sharif Cooper. Another guy that has a chance to go somewhere, I think 15 to 20 pretty easily if things broke right for him on draft night, but just super creative guard. You know, Houston should be taking as many high upside dice rolls as it can get, and his combination of ball handling, live dribble passing, ability to make plays happen is just so ridiculously real. The problem is that the shooting and the defense are just very low level right now. But if either of those things come around, he's probably pretty damn close to being a starting level guard.
Yeah, if the shot ever gets there, I hate the lean back, but I love his vision out of pick and roll. I love his feel offensively to know where guys are on the court and the way he places his passes and sometimes even surprises his own teammates with how this ball get here. Is going to have to defend, is going to have to kind of shed the label of being a smallish guard and be able to find ways to, I don't want to say hide defensively, but not be totally exposed in different actions and screens.
Okay, number 25, you are up with the Denver Nuggets.
Oof, okay. 25, Denver Nuggets. You have Jokic, you have Murray, you have Porter. I'm going to go with Trey Mann here.
Okay. Give me a
also,
sell.
Also surprised he slipped here. Another kind of instant offense guy off the bench can give you a different look than the style, pace of play that they may have with Jokic on the court to start the game. Did come on later in the year. Had a couple 25 plus point games as soon as I questioned, I think on a podcast, his shooting scoring ability, which is like the ultimate reverse jinx. So whatever we say here, just bet the opposite if you're going to Vegas, I guess. Wasn't the best season with guys around him in Florida too, underachieved a little bit, but late bloomer, kind of in a unconditional sense in that he was a McDonald's All-American, I believe, and then his freshman year was okay. I think he grew a little bit into his sophomore year, had a much better sophomore year, so a little bit of a buy of the stock of the trajectory that he's going to continue to improve and get better.
Okay, number 26, I'm up with the Brooklyn Nets. I'm going to go Daron Sharp here. I think this is another one that just came directly from the mock draft, unfortunately. I really like the fit, though. I really like the fact that he is 6'11", can really pass the ball. I think that would work exceptionally well in ball screens and in short roll scenarios with all of these ridiculous pull-up shooters like Kyrie Irving and James Harden and Kevin Durant. Obviously, we need to learn how to play defense at a higher level. We need to learn how to move his feet, but I really like the idea of them getting another big. And then I also think that he's kind of a perfect fit with Nick Claxton, who is still developing as well as a big, because Nick is the more athletic, mobile big man who profiles as maybe like a playoff switchable defender. You know, Daron Sharp, I think, profiles offensively is just the perfect fit, the tough offensive rebounder, who could potentially give these guys some second chances, even though they might not need second chances as often as normal teams because they're so skilled offensively. I like the idea of putting Daron Sharp in Brooklyn and kind of letting him develop.
Yeah, this is the first pick you stole of mine. I had Daron written on the card. I sent it to the commissioner, so we have to change our name here for 27 for the LA Clippers.
Yeah.
And I am going to go with Jeremiah Robinson-Earl from Villanova.
He fits everything that they love.
Yes, next pick. They could also use some front court depth to play alongside the guys that they have right now. Another one that's used to taking over a leadership role when he has to, and when he doesn't have to, he's comfortable playing within that Villanova system. Some of the question marks on him were, is he going to be able to shoot didn't have the best numbers, but there was a game early in the year, I believe it was against Marquette. He was like 6 for 7 from three or something along those lines. There's stuff there. He's going to look great in workouts, high character, high culture kid, bought into everything at Villanova. And in that locker room, I feel like he's going to fit in really well.
All right, number 28, I think, is another one that I'm taking directly from the mock draft. It's Jared Butler to Philadelphia. Just perfect offensive creator for what they need. Someone who can maybe pinch hit at the point guard next to Ben Simmons. Someone who can get them some instant offense off the bench as a creator and as a shooter. The floor spacing ability, the offensive ability, the fact that he's pretty good defensively as well, I think really fits their culture. It's just kind of an all-around fit.
Yeah, cosign. 100%.
Okay, number 29. Where are we at?
This is my last pick, right?
Last pick with the Phoenix Suns.
I'm going to be a little selfish here, and this is going to be a little bit more of my slant, but the Suns have had the Chris Paul effect this season. You have Devin Booker, you have DeAndre Ayton. I was a little surprised last year by the Jalen Smith pick, but with the success of being able to have, I'm going to go with best available, I kind of think, and I'm going to go with Trey Murphy III from Virginia.
I thought he
was
like...
We'll be back next week. Penny still sucks, yeah.
I thought I had him like in Penn to the Utah Jazz. I was ready.
Wow. Okay.
Like, okay. I was like, there's no circumstance where he's taking Trey Murphy.
Well, you know what? I prepped this whole thing, and I was doing these picks for other people, and I said, this is my time to be selfish. I'm going to pick for the Suns here.
I love Trey, it. And he fits everything James Jones looks for, by the way.
Right. He fits that, and also another guy, not to be repetitive, but figured out more toward the end of the year, had a bad stretch of 3 or 4 games, is athletic, has put on more weight, was actually scheduled to redshirt this year, got a late waiver, so it's kind of thrown right into the ACC fire. Can shoot it, has a little bit of a funky release, but is getting better, believing in himself more. It's a kind of a, I don't want to say unconventional, I don't want to say safe, but I like what he does just from a fit and a style, and kind of has that NBA build that you would want from the wing.
Oh, this is gross. You are, why are we friends?
I'm a bad friend.
Yeah. Oh, now I need to like really like think, because I think that what Utah needs is like another perimeter defender who can hopefully knock down shots, because that really fits their scheme. I mean, like, this is gross, Penny. You've left me.
You've left me scrambling. No choice but to take a player you've never heard of.
Yeah, a guy that I don't know anything about. There are not many of them. Oh, this is disgusting. You are a gross individual. I'm going to go Roko Prikacin.
There he is.
Yeah, I don't really even love the pick, but there's a world where you could convince yourself, if you are the Utah Jazz, that you know, they'll have good intel on him with Bojan Bogdanović being Croatian. You know, the thing that they need probably positionally is the four, I guess. You know, Prikacin has improved as a shooter this year. He's really mature, tough player, point forward skills. I mean, it's, I think he's probably best off stashing for one more year personally, but you know, maybe the Jazz want that. Maybe the Jazz would like to be able to stash him and then try and keep the luxury tax bill a little bit cleaner for next year.
I can hear how much I broke your spirit.
Oh, voice. you've totally fucking broken me here. I was like ready.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I was like, we are going to be at the forefront of the Trey Murphy first round bandwagon. I'm going to lead the charge. And then I'm excited because I'm glad that we are still. I'm glad that you've done this. I'm glad that you've taken this road for us. But oh, I wanted to be the one. That's gross, Penny. That's really gross.
It still circles back to you. Still your podcast. It was him, and I had a couple other names, but he was the guy that if it was going last, that's a good one to finish on for me anyway.
Okay, so names that didn't get taken, Greg Brown. I mean, look, I kind of mentioned earlier, I did the Kai Jones draft guide profile yesterday, so I watched a lot of Texas. The Greg Brown stuff is bad because you go back, you watch, for instance, the Baylor game. Like, Baylor, when Kai Jones got on the court, like, decided, okay, we're going to try and attack Kai. And Kai is switchable, and they eventually realized, okay, maybe we can't deal with Kai Jones and switches. Let's just switch on to Greg. Let's try and get our guys onto Greg Brown. It did not go well for Greg Brown on tape.
No.
Like, not really a shooter, not really good defensively yet, super athlete, but it's going to take a lot of time, and it's enough time that I would prefer him in the second round, personally. Bones Highland is a guy. Rokas Jokubaitis is a guy. Josh Christopher is another one that I know people really like. Are we surprised Josh Christopher didn't go?
Yeah, I was well, once you start doing it, though, that's the difference. It's different when you're kind of juggling around names and you have a 24 versus an actual team name and fit. I mean, him, do you mention Marcus Bagley, that one? Like, I don't know if he's in, out.
Well, he's still kind of making a choice. It seems unclear if he's going to be in the draft. Me personally, like, I would take Marcus Bagley somewhere in the late first, but yeah.
Yeah, I considered 29. Terrence Shannon from Texas Tech, he's right there. Aaron Henry, Michigan State, he's probably close in that range.
Trying to think who else. I will say one guy that I do really like more and more as I watch is Herb Jones out of Alabama.
He had an awesome year. I mean, first round, probably not my speed, my style, but you get him in the second, in the 40s, I'm there for that.
The thing with Herb Jones is just that if he ever figures out how to shoot it, he really might be an NBA starter.
He does enough stuff from the intangible standpoint that the jumper has to get there. I mean, he shot like, and you probably have it, like 7% or 9% his freshman year. It got better. It still was never his calling card, but he had enough big plays where he blocked a shot at the end of the game. He took a charge. He drove down the lane and kicked out. He did so many things that really impacted winning that I would want to maybe take a chance on him, like I said, in that kind of 40-ish range. And if he doesn't start right away in the NBA, if you have to put him in the G League a little bit and see if he figures it out, then you just slide him up to the big leagues and he can go right in. Like his game, it's not like he has to have something really click and he's just going to be a shooter. He does all the little pieces around it that makes him valuable on the court.
Yeah, SEC Player of the Year, SEC Defensive Player of the Year, two-time SEC All-Defense, was All-SEC Tournament this past year. Like, just does every single little thing. Such a good passer. He can make a ton of different passing looks. Super high-level defender, 1 through 4. Like, just across the board, he's just really good, really talented player. I've been saying like I'm more interested in Aaron Henry as a prospect. I think Herb Jones is way better. The more that I watch, like
way better. Wow. This is a turn from you because you're beating the Henry drum for a while here.
I think I was a little too high. Like I think that Herb Jones is just like a better basketball player. I mean, again, this guy won the SEC Player of the Year award this year playing for Alabama. Much better passer. Like Aaron Henry, a lot of the passing reads like come within the flow of the offense. Like Herb Jones like creates passing angles.
Yes, totally.
Yeah, like I mean, both of them are gonna have to shoot on some level, right? I'd rather have the guy who's a little bit better defensively, a little bit better as a team defender particularly, and a better passer. Like he's just kind of across the board, like more that kind of guy, you know.
Sounds like you just drafted him 30th.
No, I didn't. I'm gonna keep Rocco Procaccin, but you know. Yeah,
not Trey Murphy, unfortunately.
You've ruined my day. It's 9 a.m. Like, and I don't have, or you don't have long to go today. I have a while to go today. Like I still have a long day ahead of me, and I'm gonna be thinking that motherfucker Matt Penny.
You're gonna be walking Trey Murphy, like the picture from Narcos, just like sitting on a playground, like by yourself, like an empty pool. Sam, it's not that serious. It's a mock draft. We'll be okay. We'll get through it.
Have you watched any movies this weekend?
A couple. I watched I'm a pro wrestling nerd. I watched the Booker T documentary last night. I also watched, I might butcher this name, Things Heard and Seen, or Things Seen and Heard on Netflix. Horror movie.
I saw that. Was it good?
Amanda Seyfried. Am I saying that wrong? No, it wasn't. I'll be polite. I wasn't a fan. Didn't know what it wanted to be. Kind of supernatural. You buy the old house, hijinks ensue. There's a ghost. There's not. Whatever. But it just didn't catch my attention enough.
Okay. So I watched Without Remorse, the like Michael B. Jordan thing.
Yes.
I mean, I just want to see Michael B. Jordan in more action movies, but this one was not great, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's what I'd heard. The reviews weren't great.
The action scenes are, like, incomprehensible. The movie is kind of incomprehensible in general, because it's just not very good. Yeah,
define incomprehensible, though. We're also fans of, like, Fast and Furious, where cars are, you know, doing, like, front flips off bridges and landing and driving away, so.
Well, like, with the action scenes, the problem is that in the Fast and Furious movies, you always know what's happening in the action scenes, right? Like, you can just, they're visually very easy to watch. They're visually understandable. The Tom Clancy Without Remorse movie with Michael B. Jordan, the way it's shot, you can't really always tell what's happening. It doesn't really have that, like, flow from this happens, so now this is happening, so now this is happening. It feels a little bit more random than that, almost. So yeah, that was kind of a problem. And then the script is just not as good. Like, the script just doesn't really make sense. I watched Stowaway with Anna Kendrick and Daniel Day-Kim and Toni Collette.
How is that?
It's fine. Like, I think it's just, like, fine.
I've tried, because Netflix has the great ability of, you scroll over the title, it shows the whatever, 20-second preview. Sure. And when the plot was a guy was stuck in the overhead space and, like, fell out during the space shuttle, I'm like, this is a movie? Like, this is a script? Like, yes, do that.
Yeah, no, that didn't really track with me. It was kind of hard for me to wrap my head around that, to be honest. And then I watched Hunter Hunter, which is, like, this movie where a family lives out in the wild and, like, the father goes missing kind of thing. So it's then, like, a mother and daughter navigating that. It has one of the most batshit crazy endings I have ever seen in my entire life to a movie.
Wow. Okay. You've seen a few movies, so this must be pretty wild then.
It is one of the craziest, like, endings I've ever seen, point blank, period. The movie itself, I think, is kind of messy and, like, doesn't really have any narrative momentum. Like, it kind of bounces back and forth between characters without, like, building character. So, like, the movie is not great, but the ending is just, like, what in the world is happening right now?
Maybe I'll just have to fast forward with no context and watch, like, the last 10 minutes.
Yeah, I think the last 10. You would get it from the last 10.
Okay. You get a taste. Yeah.
And then my wife and I are still watching The Bureau. I think that's the one. It was funny. I was talking to an agent last night, and he was like, yeah, like, me and my wife were, like, watching The Bureau. It's, like, this French show. And I was like, shut the fuck up. That my wife and I are also watching that. Shout out
do not Chris tell Ryan. Me more.
Shout out Chris Ryan and Andy Greenwald from The Watch for convincing me to go down this road, because that show is awesome if you want to watch, like, a really, really good TV show.
Yeah, I got to get better. I got to get better with subtitle stuff. I just have the bad habit of not putting my phone down, and I hate missing, like, a scene, and you have to rewind it. Like, did I read that? Did I not? That's just a me problem, though.
Yeah, the part of the reason I like it probably is, in part, like, it forces me to put my phone down, which is, like, good for me at the end of the day.
You need some separation, which is difficult at times.
All right, Penny, tell the people where they can find you on the internet. Tell the people what's going on in your life.
Find me on the internet, @_Penny, at Twitter. My life is just surviving here. My wife had Achilles surgery, so we're day by day, hour by hour.
Oh,
please send sympathy and good wishes, I guess.
Please Venmo Matt Penny money.
No, do not do that. Don't do that. We'll end up some weirdo story, like a podcast. I ended up with $78 and spent it on, you know, Sour Patch Kids and, I don't know, BioSteel.
Oh, my God. This has been the Game Theory Podcast. Please remember, rate, review, subscribe. I have a really fun story coming probably early next week, if you made me bet. I don't know when it's gonna officially be out, but I'm working on something pretty fun. I'll have a big board probably late next week, but a lot of my time right now is just kind of being spent building the draft guide. I'll also be podcasting at least one more time on the NBA this week, maybe twice, depending on if I can find a couple of good guests. So until next time, we'll talk soon. Bye.